And that's who trained me. And if you so choose, I can train you as well. I could teach you about strength that lies deep within. Teach you how to unlock power, discipline, confidence, self-respect.
Yeah, well, I just moved to the area, and I was looking for some sort of workout, just to stay in shape.
Taekwondo is terrific for keeping in shape. It's also a deadly serious killing system. I mean, it's probably the best of all martial arts.
I hear jiu-jitsu is really good for balance.
Jiu-jitsu sucks. What you want is Taekwondo.
It is the Homemade Broadcast, episode 72. It's the last one of the year. I'm very excited because I get to take like 3 weeks off, 4 weeks off maybe. The good thing about working for yourself is you can take as much time off as you like and nobody can say anything to you. So I'm very excited. Got some open mics coming up at the beginning of the year, the 13th, at Sly Bar once again. Of course. And then we have I'm excited, the Cigar City Comedy guys were putting on a showcase on the 29th. But we'll have more info about that, after the new year. We're just going to enjoy the holidays. We're going to open some presents. We're going to spend some time with loved ones, hopefully, or just, people you like. You don't have to love them as long as you like them. But joining me on this last episode of the year, we have... we're going out with a bang. We're going out with a big one. We got my man Bask in here, visual artist, extraordinaire, and just all-around handsome guy. How are you, my man?
How are you? Thanks for having me. I don't know if we're going out with a bang, but it's like we're going on a low point.
No way, man. I'm really excited because when I think of the St. Pete area and even Tampa Bay, I mean, I've heard of you for years now. And I'm excited to have you on, because when I think of this area and visual artists, you're the first name that comes to mind.
Man, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's like I've been grinding it out for many a years now, so it's been fun.
How long have you been grinding it out?
I've been professionally doing, professionally pursuing being an artist for 14 years now, 14.
14. Did you start here in the St. Pete, Tampa Bay area? Or?
Yeah, I pretty much grew up in St. Pete. My family and I immigrated here from the Czech Republic in 84.
Okay.
And we came right to St. Pete. And so I lived here pretty much all my life, except for from 2000 to 2004, I lived in Detroit.
You came in 1984. Mm-hmm.
Just like
so
Orwell.
Like 30 years now.
What's funny about that is like we came here in 1984, and 1984 ended up being one of the most influential books I've ever read. And literally, we escaped from the same regime that's written.
Really?
Yes.
How old were you when you came here?
Seven.
Seven. So do you kind of remember what it was like?
I do.
Over there in that time?
I do. Yeah, I do. And it's like, and we ended up going back, like, once communism fell, like, we were able to go back and, like, visit our elders and stuff like this. So I have memories from when I was, like, a little boy, like, pretty vivid ones. I remember the houses that we lived in and, it was nice.
What was, like, as far as, because I know your art focuses, I could tell that you're influenced a lot by that time. What was it like living, like, did you have to get in bread lines and, do that whole thing?
No, it's, with my family, it was a little bit more complicated. The short story of it is like, so my family, pre-communism, in the city that we lived in, they were kind of a prominent family. They owned a massive factory that employed most of the town. So when the communists came and took everything over, my grandfather, being a very influential member of the community, they were like, well, we're going to take your factory. And since everybody listens to you in this town, we want you to back us up. And it's all for the cause and, all that stuff. Marxist revolution. Mm-hmm. And of course, he didn't like that too much. So he protested. So they were like, all right, well, we'll just take your house too. And then so they took our house, or this is before I was born. And then in the 60s, my father was protesting and he got arrested. And he was like mistreated in prison. And then like, so basically it was a systematic attack on my family. And they were just, and they literally told my parents when me and my sister were born that we would not have the same opportunities as everybody else, that we would not have, like they intentionally targeted my family.
So it was going to be worse.
It was going to be worse.
Initially, probably if, you know, your granddad would have went along with it, it might have been a little better, but.
It might have been a little bit better, of course, but if somebody comes into your house and is like, all of a sudden it's like, all right, this is mine now and you're going to like it, basically, you know, so not that many people would probably like that too much.
I've done some history classes in school, of course, but I did go to public school, so I'm just a step above being a moron. But how did this whole thing happen? Like, what was the instigator, the ignition to the fire that started this whole communism thing?
It's Marxist thoughts, and you know, on paper it's a utopia.
Sounds great. Yeah.
You know, yeah. No. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Unfortunately, it fails to take into account the human condition and a human corruptibility, a human greed, human ambition. You know, it's like all these things are within us. So if you read Marxism or communism, it's very black and white, and it's like it's euphoric. You know, but actually, and for what. In that same vein, capitalism reads the same way. You know, it's like if you read the guidelines of capitalism, it's like, yeah, this is great. It's like, you know, but, you know, once you apply the human element into it, things get a lot messier, you know.
I think I've searched long and hard to try to find what a better system would be. And I think humans are pretty much inside dark creatures who are self.
Yes.
But I think that's part of like nature, man.
Yeah.
Like that's how we became
more.
What we are today is by the way, we competed with each other and the best, you know, won. That's that whole Darwinism thing.
Yep.
So while it's not perfect, I don't know what would be better.
Well, I think again, like, I think you just hit the nail on the head. I think that it, you know, I think everybody does the best they can, try to be a good, decent person, but it's like we all have vices, we all are flawed, we all make mistakes. It's you know, I think there's something I don't know, kind of inherent in human beings that, you know, and then what's actually, let me take that a step further, what's the only thing that's strange about humans, it's like we're the only creatures on the planet that kind of fail to find a synergy with our environment. Like we just destroy it every chance we get, and then we just move on to the next spot. Destroy that. You know, it's like
that's the downside with the capitalism thing is that you have to. I was as a child, I heard about the oil. You know, I think my seventh grade social studies teacher, I found out that oil was a limited resource, and eventually one day we weren't going to have it anymore, and that was going to be bad.
Yeah,
because our everything is powered on oil, and I used to get really. Like I'd have panic attacks over this as a kid.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because I was like, I don't want to live in this, you know, dark, because I think it was dark ages times, too, we were learning about. And I was like, I don't want to do this. This is scary.
That's a bad time to come up, the dark ages.
Yeah. But I tell you what it was that I found out about, like, I really started to believe in humanity, and I realized that they're just pumping us dry. They're going to pump it until, like, we can't get any more money out of it, and then we will have something new. I know we already have it, but it's just we gotta bleed what we can out of the oil first, and then we'll get it, which is unfortunate.
Yeah,
but it's also like it's amazing what the human being can do.
It's very parasitic in nature.
Absolutely,
you know,
and it's all about making a few extra dollars.
Yeah,
it's very sad.
You know what's funny? I always think back to the Matrix, and this is such a corny reference, but it's like, you know, the one of the agents, he's like telling Neo about, like, you know, how he perceives human beings. And it's funny. I don't know if I just become more jaded, but like whenever that movie came out, was that like 17 years ago? It's like, I'm like, yeah, I kind of agree with that.
Yeah, that was
it's like very dark and pessimistic view of human beings.
It's true. But I mean, I have this, like I said, I feel like at our hearts, we're all in it for ourselves. But when we do manage to work together, really cool things happen.
I agree.
Like
I agree.
Do you know about the NASA or the, I don't know if it was the European Space or NASA, but some we just landed this
thing on a comet.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? Like, that blows my mind.
And then we just, like, did the Mars trip
already.
Yeah, we just sent a bunch of people on a one-way trip to Mars.
No, we haven't done that yet, but I think that's going to happen.
Oh, it's, yeah.
In very shortly, in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I heard there was, like, this woman on, I heard some interview, and it was kind of crazy. Like, you know, she's signing up for knowing that she's not coming back. And I don't know, that's kind of mind-blowing a little bit.
I actually did sign up for it online.
Did you for real?
Yeah, but if they came to me, I'd be like, I'm backing out. Forget it. I just wanted to see. It'd be cool to get picked, though, just to know that. And then they'll be like, my Wikipedia entry would be, this guy wussed out at the last minute.
But, well, what's funny, the woman that I heard, and I think it might have been This American Life story, actually, she entered into that, and then I think The Bachelor. And
really?
She's like, whichever one
gets
first.
Hilarious.
That's the one she's going to do. And then we're like, yay.
And she's doing Mars.
She's doing Mars.
Do you remember what the date was for that? When they were going to launch that?
I was just hearing about it on the radio. So I'm thinking that it's coming up.
It's got to be, because I know they're testing the rockets now to get us out, because the space shuttles are gone now or whatever.
Yeah.
So we don't have anything. We're relying on the Russians and then private enterprise, too.
Oh, that's had a little bit of a hiccup.
Yeah. My man Elon Musk, though, is going to save the day, I think.
Yeah.
He's killing it.
I think that, you know, and that is the future. You know, I mean, it's like you have the risk of, you know, having everything be privately funded and stuff. But things like this, I think that, you know, eventually we will get to that. I think Jetsons kind of like, you know, leisurely flight to the moon type thing, you know. Yeah. Although I got to say, it's like, aside from the visual of Earth, it's like, I've always thought that the moon would probably be a pretty boring place, you know.
It seems like pretty much everywhere else in the universe so far is a really boring place that we know of.
Check this out. If anybody wants to go to the moon, drive through the long part of Texas.
Yeah.
That's
just
the moon.
Nothing. Yeah.
It never ends. You have no reception, and it's just you and like the most surreal geology around you. It's really bizarre.
Yeah, it must have been cool. I'm sure being there, you would feel differently, but at the same time, you'd probably get there and be like, ah, this is awesome.
Yeah.
All right, let's get going back home now.
Yeah, I got things.
There's water and air back there that are very important. So, yeah.
I heard this interview with that NASA captain. He like made a bunch of like YouTube videos and stuff like. And I forgot his name. And
the guy with the mustache.
I think so. Yeah.
The Canadian guy. Yeah.
And he was talking about like this dichotomy of it's like you're both can be claustrophobic and. The other one fails me, but it's when you're afraid of wide open spaces because you're confined in this, like this, you know, space outfit, which is just like, you know, it's very confining. You're very limited, but then you're in the vastness
of everything.
Everything. Yeah.
That's wild to think about.
Mind
for sure.
Blown.
So, okay. So you came here in 84. So you've been here 30 years now.
Actually, yeah, to the day, actually, yesterday was my 30-year anniversary.
Did you do anything special for it?
You know what's funny? I actually did. I was working in the studio painting, and in a weird way, that's kind of like, I mean, even though that's what I do every day, but that it is literally the perfect celebration, because that's why my parents immigrated, because they wanted to give a future to my sister and me where it's like where we could decide what we wanted to do and follow our bliss and all that. So so the fact that I'm a working artist and I'm making a living off of my art, and on the 30-year anniversary, it's like I'm in the studio working on a massive commission. It's like it was just like it couldn't have – it was like the most perfect kind of like setting.
Nice. So you've been working and you've been in St. Pete. You were in 2 years in Detroit. What were you doing?
4 years in Detroit.
4 years?
Yeah.
Were you doing art out there or doing something
else?
I was.
Well, it was like I was in my 20s, like early 20s. And it's like, you know, growing up around here, are you from the area?
Yeah.
You are from the area.
From entire life, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So it's like, so, you know, in my 20s, I got like, got antsy. And I was just like, I want to see what else is out there. So. And I was just beginning to kind of like get my career going. And Detroit at the time was very receptive. And, geographically, it's close to a lot of other cool cities like Chicago, Cleveland, Toronto, Cincinnati. So it just kind of seemed like the natural pull. So I leaped into it, and it was a it was a great 4 years. Detroit, I gotta say, is like if St. Pete is my wife, so to speak, then Detroit is my mistress, because that city had an equal part of influence to do with, like, that influenced me and my art and my career and everything like that.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, we're here with visual artist Bask. Bask, do you have a website that people can find yet?
I do, but it's all, it's grumbled. But find me on like Instagram and Twitter as known as Bask.
Okay. Detroit is picking up because a lot of the artists and just artisans in general are heading back there because it's a mess over there. And it's, you can find homes for cheap.
Yeah.
You know, there's those stories where you can find a home for a dollar, which, of course, you got to pay the property taxes on those. So it's not really a dollar.
Yeah. But, and here's the other catch. So you buy this house, it's for $100 or whatever. And now you're essentially have this nightmare on your hands because you're in a neighborhood, you're in a house, all the copper's been stripped out of it. Now it's your responsibility to bring it up to code. And next, you look at your left, that house has been burnt down. You look on your right, that house has been burnt down. it's like. So yeah, but this is the thing. Let me say something about Detroit. Like, you know, if people only listen to what they hear on the news about Detroit, it's like that is such a one-sided perspective. Anybody that goes to Detroit that I've ever taken there for the first time, they're blown away, because the one thing that Detroit has, which is a booming, is the arts, like you said. It's so music, visual arts. People turn out for shows. People buy art. Like, it's so, it has a really rich and thriving kind of heartbeat to it. And yeah, it's dilapidated. It's been beat up a little bit over the years, you know. It's like, it's still holding on tooth and nail, you know. So I think that's a testament to the spirit of that city.
Yeah, I think in general, artists, artisans, you know, whatever, are the lifeblood that bring these communities up. You look at Brooklyn in the 80s, that got gentrified, and it became this, you know, what it is today, really. I mean, you wouldn't want to be there in the 80s, but all the, you know, all the hipsters moved into Harlem and stuff in,
yeah,
in the 80s.
Or Soho in Manhattan.
Totally.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of the
So what you're saying, so the hipsters are going to take over Detroit.
They are, yeah. And I think they're going to be the saviors of Detroit. They'll bring it back.
That would be hilarious. Yeah, until the winter comes, because, man, that Detroit winter is a bruiser.
I was in Chicago a couple weeks ago, and it was shocking.
It was
shocking,
yeah.
I had never felt
anything
like that.
It's like you feel your bone marrow.
Yes.
Like it's like you feel inside
your skeleton. Yeah, I could feel my bones.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I went and I had, when I got on the plane in Tampa, I had on a flannel, a pair of jeans, no socks, and a pair of boat shoes. So, and I was like, well, I'll be okay. You know, it's a short, you know, the hotel is about a quarter mile from the train. I'll be good. The plane door opened, right?
Yeah.
And I could feel it seeping in, and I was like, oh, no, like, I wasn't prepared for this.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, unless that hotel is immediately outside of the door of the plane, then, yeah, you're underdressed.
Yeah, I was very, very underdressed. So I had to break open my suitcase in the middle of the airport and get ready, and I was still freezing. Like, I just had jeans, and the wind just cut through the jeans. I think it was, like, 18 degrees or something. It was just miserable, but it was sunny and it was nice.
Yeah,
but I was like, I don't think I'm gonna be able to do, like, I don't think I'm gonna be able to do this, like, be outside.
Very similar conditions, because both Detroit and Chicago, they're kind of placed in similar spots. They're both by one of the lakes.
Yep.
You know, and it's like, so they both have that cold winter lakiness coming at them, you know. So it's like, I remember, and just like in the mornings, like shoveling your car out of the snow, scraping the glass. In the meantime, it's like you know, fingers are all frozen up. It's like, yeah, it's hellish.
Yeah, on the last day, it was raining, and we had to walk to the train, which is about a quarter mile.
Oh my God!
So, and it was probably about 38. So it was solid rain, but it was cold.
Oh,
and it was miserable.
Man.
And then when we got on the plane, it started to snow. So then they had to spray down the plane, and we missed our connecting flight home. It was a mess.
But
it's a great town, though.
Oh, Chicago's incredible. Incredible, like, on all fronts. It's like, it's, you know, great place for art, great place for, you know, great food, great bars, everything. It's across the board. It's a really cool spot.
I love these. I'm sure you've seen them. The Tokyo, what is it? New York, Tokyo, London, St. Pete shirts.
Yeah, that's those, Chad Mize from Blue Lucy.
Sure, I know, yeah. Chad. I get mad at those sometimes. I'm like, stop it. But then someone was like, they're supposed to be a gag. And I was like, are they? I don't.
Well, this is, his shirt got pretty big to
it
where
did,
it's like,
yeah.
He got, he has bootleggers out there.
I've heard this.
But it's so weird. Like they like used like some, like a slightly different font, and it looks like
it's a
generic
bad font. Too,
yeah, it's
yeah.
Like, yeah, exactly. It's like, it looks like a generic version. It's almost like,
it's like Arial font.
Yeah. Like exactly. Helvetica's ugly cousin.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's so, yeah, there was something about like it. I don't know. I think he got to the bottom of who it was. It's, but yeah, I guess it's flattering in a way, but yeah, it's like, I would have been pretty upset about it.
To me, like, I think it's kind of a cool, you know, concept to rank us in there, but also it's like, stop it. We're not even close to being there. I think there are very cool things happening here.
Oh, we're not anywhere close to that. Like, St. Pete is essentially just a giant town, you know?
Yeah.
It's an awesome place. Like, it's like, I've set anchor, like, after I moved back from Detroit, like, before I left, so here's the difference. Before I left, I was like, you know, screw you, I'm out of here, I'm never coming back. And then when I came back, kind of licking my wounds a little bit, you know, it's like I had to come back under not the best of circumstances. And I like found like this whole new appreciation for St. Pete, like all the things that I was ignoring. And like, you know, I'm not really a beach person, but it's nice to go to the beach once in a while. It's nice to have that in your backyard. And it's like people plan their vacations just to come here for 2 weeks just to dip their toes into the water here, you know. So I kind of started to kind of opened my eyes to St. Pete, and I fell in love with it. Like, it's, you know, I don't know where what the future holds, but I don't see me leaving this area ever.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask you about that. Like, if you had any plans to like, what, and I guess my question was, what was the reason for basing out of St. Pete? But I guess you kind of already touched on it.
Yeah, grew up, it's like, you know, it's like I kind of like very early on just was like, you know, very set on what I wanted to do. You know, I've really limited my choices in life. I went to like one of the worst high schools that this area has to offer. I heard it's better now. I heard it's a great high school. Should I say it?
Like, yeah, why not? Who cares?
Yes. Well, I went to Dixie Hollins.
Okay.
And in the 90s, that school was like a sociological experiment. You know, they literally took in the worst kids from all over town and brought them into this area of Pinellas Park that is kind of, you know, not as open-minded as one would hope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm used to say that in a very nice way. But, and yeah, it was an awful, awful experience. You know, it's like, so, you know, I dropped out, essentially. So, and then went to work for my dad, and yeah, it's my mom, she wasn't happy that I dropped out, but my dad was like, hey, looks like you're gonna know the cabinet trade now. So
yeah.
But and it's I'm so grateful that I did that. I don't, like, everything that I learned from working with him, I'm still apply today into my art. So
did you have a plan, like, when you dropped out, you're like, okay, I'm gonna be, did you like, I'm gonna be an artist now, or
no plan? I there was still like many years of acting out and just being a teenager, you know, an idiot, you know. It's like, so I got into a lot of trouble, got arrested a few times, and so I, you know, it's like finally I snapped out of it, and I was like, all right, time to do something. And art is the only thing that I've, it's kind of like instinctive. It was like wasn't a very conscious thing, and it's weird to kind of reflect back on it, because like it seems like it was like kind of like, all right, I had this plan and then I did this, but kind of thinking back, it was kind of fly by the seat of my pants, you know.
Can't really pinpoint the day that you were like, oh yeah, I'm an artist now.
Note the date and the time.
Right now.
Today I'm an artist. No, it's like, well, all growing up, that's all I ever did was art. It's like, it's so, it was when it wasn't, you know, started with like Mad Magazine and Cracked and all that stuff. Then that graduated to comic books, which took many years and many, many, many dollars out of my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And then that graduated to graffiti. And then so, you know, that just kind of opened up all kinds of possibilities. So I did that for many years. And then that just natural progression into galleries.
How did that happen? Like, how did you go from doing that to now I'm in galleries?
Again, it's like, you know, I kind of was, it was after, actually, after the last time that I got arrested, and it was like nothing crazy, but I had to do community service. So, and they let me pick where I wanted to do it. So I was like, oh, let me see if the Dalí Museum will let me do it. So I went there. I explained my situation. I was like, I'm not a psycho or anything. It's just, you know, I just got into a little trouble and I'm trying to, you know, fly straight. So would you have me? So they were like, all right, we need somebody at the front desk. So for 6 months, I did the front desk at the Dalí Museum. That's the old location, not the new one.
Yeah.
And it was great. And I think like that was kind of like the beginning footsteps. Actually, by the time the 6 months was over, like they... Actually, like, because I was, like, really into it. Like, it's, you know, it's like I made friends with everybody there. And it's like they were, like, trying to talk me into taking the docent course. So for me to become a docent, I was like, not for me.
Were you into, like, art history, too? Like, is there certain guys that you follow that were kind of inspirational? Or
I mean, I am, but I think very kind of organically. Like, and this is what I love about, I guess, my come up and the way that I learned, you know, all the aspects of the art world to the degree that I know them is like it happened. The fact that I had to know it. So I sought it out myself. So, you know, never took a business class, never took a business school, you know, never did any of this, never studied art history. And it's like, so I had to, my own curiosity kind of opened up these doors, and it still does. Like, it's like, you know, there's genres that interest me, and so I research, like, oh, who, you know, who's this artist and who's this artist, you know. So it's just like a natural kind of curiosity that opened up those doors. But with that said, I did know, like, you know, the fathers of, I guess, the type of art that I do would be like, you know, Andy Warhol, Robert Rauschenberg, you know, those are like the greats, you mm-hmm. know.
Yeah, the Americans for sure.
Yeah.
So the city, I want to ask you about that video. That's what it was. The 600 block video that just came out.
Oh, yeah. Marianne Lynch's project. Yeah.
That's who it was. I was curious. And who is that?
Marianne Lynch.
I should probably know.
She probably owns us. She is a, she's an amazing, amazing person. She is basically like a real estate mogul around town. She owns... I think somebody once said that she owns more dirt than anybody else in St. Pete. I think like 100-something properties.
Wow.
And so that property is hers. And even though the wall is actually connected to somebody else's property, that wall is like 8 inches or something on her property line. So technically she owns the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So last year, actually almost to the date, like I did that mural last year this time. And it was like a big controversial thing because, like, I guess when she bought that property, there was like another mural up there and she painted it white and like the community was up at arms and everybody was very hairy situation. Then I step in there and, you know, I'm catching it from all sides. I'm like, you know, it's like, and I know a lot of the people that had the complaints and stuff, but it was still kind of like walking into a hornet's nest. I was like, just give me a chance. Just let me do something. If nobody likes it, then we can just paint over it. Who cares? Mm-hmm. It's just paint on a wall. Nobody's like reinventing the wheel here, you know.
Wasn't it like a Pabst logo that was there?
It was, yeah. That was on the one side, and then there was like if I remember right, there was like some kind of like almost like Aspen-esque mountainous scene.
Yeah, I'm trying to
half comic. I don't know. It was kind of like I think a couple of different artists painted on it, and so I don't think it was ever really finished either.
No, and I thought it was like one of those original an old, you know, 60s or 50s one. I don't know.
No, it was all new. It was like everything there was like, I think it was made to look like that, you know?
Yeah. Do you know who did the original one?
No, I don't. Like I said, I think it was a couple of different artists, but it escapes me, you know?
Was that kind of the one that started this mural trend here? Because now you and Sebastian are killing it.
No, that's kind of like, well, what's interesting is like, So Chris Parks and Tess, they did a massive mural behind the State Theater, and it's incredible. And they had the help of the Vitale brothers, John and Paul Vitale, to help.
Oh, yeah, those guys are killing it, too.
Killing it. And so they put this mural up, and it was like literally kind of set the bar as far as I'm concerned. Like, that mural is a beast. And so, and then, you know, kind of a lull a little bit. And then out of the blue, here comes Seabass. Mm-hmm. And like a monster, he just attacks block by block by block. And it's just like every day there was like, seemed to be like a new mural. It's like this kid is so fast and he's so good.
Yeah.
And I got to say, it's like, I've actually credited him that, you know, it's like, I've been doing this for a long time and I do a lot of murals, but I usually do them outside of the city. And he kind of like fired me up again, you know. It's like, it's like, you know, you got a kid like that kind of breathing down your neck, kind of like coming up on you. Yeah. You know, it's like you better act right.
Yeah.
Get to work.
Right. And if you're just joining us, we are sitting down with visual artist Basque, the art king of St. Pete.
Oh.
See, I really like Seabass.
Now I'm getting beat up.
No, stop it. You got to take some credit. You got to take some pride in your work, man. But yeah, I hear you. Just tell me to go F off.
I'll take the art popper of St. Pete.
Okay, I like that. I can go with that. I really like, Seabass was on earlier this year, and his story was awesome. Great. How he came from Kansas City, and he was kind of doing some stuff over there, and came here, and out of the blue, just started doing stuff. Like I said, you know, when we were talking earlier, if you just ask for stuff,
exactly,
so a lot of times you'll get it.
Yeah, and he's got that fire in him that, you know, is intoxicating. It's like, as a, you know, it's like, you know, we're all, you know, kind of colleagues of the same craft. And it's like, so I personally get really excited when I'm like, you know, if I'm checking social media or something and I'm seeing like a new mural by, you know, somebody that I know or like, it's like, it inspires me. It's like, I'm like, yeah. And it's like, go get it, and makes me want to like work harder. So, you know, Sebastian and I, we're not like, you know, like super close buddies or anything, but I have a respect for him, for his art, and for that hunger that's within him, because that's what's going to make him massive.
I think he's like, I don't want to work. So he's just working really hard not to work.
Well, that's the alternative. It's like, there's no better motivator. It's kind of like, it's like, well, the alternative is this. Well, then you should probably work hard at this.
Yeah, that's my motto is, I'm going to work hard now so I don't have to work at all later.
But, you know, the interesting thing is like, I personally, like, it's like, I'm completely shy. I've been working literally, like, almost around the clock. I think I've slept for, like, 30 minutes in, like, the past 3 days. And I work long and hard to make these deadlines. And it's like, deadlines are back to back. So it's kind of insane hours, and it's grueling, it's taxing, but, you know, I can't think of anything else that I'd rather be doing. It's like, I love it. I love the pain that comes with all the good stuff. It's like, that's your rite of passage.
Yeah, for me, it's like, there's a lot of hobby. I got my hands in a lot of honeypots here. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a lot of different things. And I've always been the kind of person, though, that once it becomes work, then I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah. No.
So that's almost like you ruin what you like to do because it becomes work.
You couldn't be more right. It's a really weird thing when the hobby, the passion becomes vocation. And when you have to do it on call, there's responsibilities attached to it. You can't just do it on a whim or like when you're inspired. And so, yeah, it's like it takes some discipline, you know. Mm-hmm. But again, the alternative doesn't look so good.
You got to make some cabinets or something. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you get through those times? Because I struggle with, I'll look at something and I'll put it aside. Mm. How you come back to it? Do you do multiple things at once, or is it, do you just concentrate on the one thing, or?
No, there's always like, it's multiple things at once. And, you know, obviously if there's projects I'm focused on, I do project to project to project, but yeah, it can get a little tricky, you know. It's like last year, perfect example is I had a show out in San Francisco and then had some other things around the country. So instead of flying from city to city, I was like, you know what? I've driven a lot, like up and down, from here to Detroit, here to New York, here to Baltimore and stuff, but I've never driven out west, you know? And so that kind of like going back to what we were talking about earlier about the long part of Texas is like, that's when I saw it, you know? It's like, and I saw Utah, which was gorgeous. It's insane how beautiful Utah is. And so I'm on this like, you know, life-changing trip. It's just me and, like, you know, the open road. And it was, it's just amazing. I go from, you know, new people in different cities and did a bunch of, like, really cool projects along the way. And, like, literally as I'm driving home, I'm still, you know, I'm already in Florida and super inspired. Like, yes, I'm going to get it. Like, I got all these ideas. Soon as I drove, pulled in my driveway, like, it's as if, like, a curtain fell. And I couldn't shake it. Like, I couldn't, like I was, for, like, months, I couldn't paint.
Oh, no.
You know? It's like, it felt like, and there was, like, this, a weird intimidation to it. Like, it's like, I felt like, it felt like somebody was asking me to pick up a scalpel and remove a gallbladder or something. You know? It's like, it was surreal.
It's foreign to you, almost.
And, yeah, and I had to fight through it. It was really uncomfortable. It was, you know, because I had deadlines that were stacking up and, you know, people were getting pissed at me. And so it's like, it was a very, very... kind of taxing, but so once I got over that, that's when I was like, all right, it's I'm gonna strike while the iron's hot, because that I don't like that.
Is there tools that you can use to try to get you over that, or is it just you gotta ride it out?
I'm sure there are healthy tools. I don't think I was doing the healthy tools. I think I was just getting drunk at bars every night. I was like that sad Bukowski kind of character, you know, just brooding in dive bars.
Yeah, that could be okay sometimes. I mean, do you find you get more work done when you're happy or sad, or kind of in the middle, maybe even?
I think it's, you know, I'm at that point where it's I think any creation, whether it's a song or any concept, I think it's never just one. Like, so it maybe can stem from something bad or ugly or miserable, but then through the process, through creating that voice of that, it's like you get happy even though you're sad about it. Like, it's a very conflicting thing.
I know.
So there's a lot of, because I'm, you know, it's like my art is, even if it's kind of like there's smiling little characters, everything usually has a darker underbelly to it. You know, my stuff's kind of grim.
Yeah, I think that definitely comes through too.
And yeah, so I'm definitely pulling from the darker spots, from the darker corners of my beings.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I've always found that too. Like, I get no work done. If I'm in a good mood and happy, forget it. I'll get nothing done, because I want to enjoy the time
happy.
Of being happy. Yeah, I
mean, it's time to do things.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
It's like time to fix these friendships that all the people that I've upset with me being a jerk all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So exactly. You got to enjoy that. And then when you come back down to earth again, and the world kind of pushes down on you, then you can kind of get stuff done.
Well, I think that's, you know, that's that fight, I think, within us. I think, you know, it's like, yeah, when you're feeling down, it's almost like and if that inspires you or inspires something, then I think that's almost like your inner beast, kind of like almost like rising up against. You know, it's like no, I will not. You know, it's like you're not going to let this take you down. You know?
Yeah, yeah, totally. Are you familiar with the Warehouse District? Just getting this loan, the big one for the.
Well, I haven't heard about any grant or anything, but I know the Warehouse District. Yeah,
yeah, they just got approved for like $350,000 or something to build these little studios,
little
studios along there. So that's really exciting. And I was I get frustrated with this city because it is booming. Yeah. As far as everybody's an artist here, I mean,
everybody's
of some kind,
artist. Yeah,
which is great. But I mean, you know, I feel like. And Frank Strunk mentioned something in the video about how I think he expressed his frustration because
he's
we got
very open. That
yes,
Frank Strunk.
I love it. That's great. That's what we need, because we have all these. The Dolly's fantastic, and I credit the Dolly for bringing that here. But you got Chihuly, wherever he's from, and he's here, and they throw their money behind these guys. But there are a lot of talented people here that they should be throwing their money behind.
Things they're definitely on a. More positive upswing, but like I always used to say, you know, again, I love St. Pete. I love the city. I love the people that are here. It's like it's like a hidden secret of Florida, this area. You know, I think like, you know, when people think of Florida or like what Florida cities are like, they don't think of St. Pete. You know, St. Pete, I think, is like at the level of, you know, Portland or you know, Asheville and stuff. So, but I used to, you know, I live here and I'm work out of here. I have a studio here. But it's like, for a long time, it's like all of my bills were paid from other cities, essentially.
Yeah. So that's good that you noticed that changing, though, because...
I do, yeah.
That's great. I was having a conversation with Corey Allen. He just opened a gallery up on... you know him?
No.
His is right near Three Daughters. He's new. He's from Oklahoma.
Nice.
And he's, you know, trying to put his nose in here. And he's having a tough time, but he's confident, but... you know, he's complaining that there's not enough local people here to support it.
Yeah, it's still a little tricky because, from my experience, you know, the openings would be big blowouts, you know, tons of people. But then after a while, you kind of look at the room and you're like, oh, wait a minute. Oh, I get it. This is just a place for like a social scene. Like nobody's buying art. You know, it's like, so the opening will have a lot of people and you'll see all your friends and family, you'll have a great time, you'll get nice and sauced it's a social event. Yeah. It's like, and what's another thing that can sometimes be corrosive is like, and this is why I kind of, I mostly stick to myself. It's like, I have respect for all the artists in the area. I love when I see new things going up, but for the most part, I stick to myself and away from any. There's a lot of weird little cliques that can kind of form.
Absolutely.
And it's like, and then this group is against that. It's just like, it's like, stop it. Knock it off. You know, it's like, it's just like, just get to work and just stop it. Just stop like undercutting the opportunity before it even becomes something, you know?
Certainly. And that's a big hurdle that I think creatives have to get over, because people in general are very egotistical. Their egos are huge. But then when you have somebody who's creating, holy moly, that takes it to a whole nother level, man.
Oh, yeah. It's like, and artists have notoriously hypersensitive egos, you know? It's like, it's just kind of like, give me a break. It's almost like the golden rule. It's like give the respect to others that you want given to you. And it's like life, it would be golden. If everybody abided by the golden rule, that's a utopia.
Yeah. There's a lot of, I deal with a lot of comedians too, you know, and I think they're the worst, even over artists.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Cause I think you have to be a special type of person to be a comedian.
Absolutely.
And usually pretty much a piece of garbage inside.
Yeah.
And it's only cause you got beaten down so much that it just erupts and comes out of you.
Absolutely. And then then you're fearless. You know, it's like when you're on stage, it's almost like it's just you and a mic and the audience, you know? And it's just like, all right, here we go.
Yeah. It's special but it's at the same time, you're just like, oh man, it's hard to be in this entertainment or, I don't even know what you call it, the creative game in general. It's just, it's hard to be involved sometimes.
It is. And you know, it's like, and that's why I'm saying it's like the why make it harder by creating almost arbitrary beefs and cliques and all this. It's like, and I've seen so much of the scene fail before it even starts because of this fact, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like there's like these, like weird kind of like, it's like we're doing this and well, we're going to do this. Just stop it. Knock it off. Just do something.
That's it. We're done already.
See you later, everybody.
One quick.
I'm out.
What's your contact info in case anyone wants to get a hold of you to see your portfolio?
It's like if anybody types up Baskart on Google or known as Bask, that's the website, and my Insta who's it's and Face What's and all
Tweet,
that stuff.
Twitter dudes and all that thing. Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Well, hey, man, I really appreciate you coming in.
Well,
it was great.
Thank you so much for having me.
I didn't even use these. I used like two of them and I had all of them. I knew it was going to be a good one. You have to come back next year.
No, awesome. It's like definitely like pleasure being here, and thank you for having me on.
Absolutely, man. Thank you, everyone. It's been a fantastic year. I couldn't have asked for it to go much better, and I'm looking forward to 2015. It's going to be great. I know it. You can find me on Facebook, facebook.com/thehomemadebroadcast, or the Twitter at @home_made_man. For Radio St. Pete, my name is Will Kuntz. Enjoy your holiday. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Kwanzaa. I don't know. Do you say happy Kwanzaa? I don't know.
You do.
You do. Yeah. Ramadan, I think, is also here. So happy
Festivus.
Festivus is that? That's next
for the rest of
couple
us,
days.
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple days away. Have a good one. I'll see you next year. I love you very much. Goodbye.